Call the meeting of the City Government Finance Committee to order. Is our microphone on? Yes, okay. The clerk will put the roll, and we have two sets of minutes. If people have had a chance to look at those, we have the April 20th minutes. Representative Gila Forrest moves approval of those minutes. Any questions? I'll double check the mics. I don't think that they're on.
I think Mr. Carter should be on.
Is this one on? Oh,
well, I'll just talk loud and hope that it comes up from here. Did we turn off the DFO side of the aisle's microphone like Senator Jennings did some years ago? Were you here, Representative Solberg, when Jennings set the microphones on?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
If you do any good, we can stand up in here and scream if you want.
Okay. Well, we won't get to that today, I hope. Representative Dela Force moves the April 27th minutes. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. And the minutes are approved. We have the April 27th minutes. Representative Hilton moves approval of those. Any questions? Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Those minutes are adopted. Members, today we have three items of interest that have been brought forward by either interested parties or members of the committee. We're going to try to get through everything by 12 o'clock today. I know some members have other commitments to get out of here, and we want to get through things as expeditiously as possible. So we're going to try to cover everything as smoothly and fast as we can, but still give time for testimony. We have people that have pre-signed up for testimony, but we certainly want to take, if somebody wants to come in and give some testimony, we want to afford you that opportunity. We just want to kind of keep the conversation to the point where we're not cutting people off, but also we're not going over time. So the first item we have of interest that we've had some veterans groups talk to me about is the effect the smoking ban has had on charitable gaming. Mr. Barrett, Mr. Wilson, and Mr. Puglisi, I believe, are all here. And we're going to just have Mr. Barrett. Did members get a handout? It's a fairly thick document. Is it still coming out? Tom, do you have a...
They should have copies.
Okay. Do you have it? Looks like this. Okay. It's a pretty detailed summary of gain and loss statements for different counties. And Mr. Barrett, welcome. If you could identify yourself and walk through the document and any other comments you may have for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Tom Barrett. I'm the director of the Gambling Control Board. If it's okay with you, I'd give a brief overview, maybe talk to some of the highlights, and then get into the detail of the report. But quickly, a number of local units of government passed a smoking ban. The focus today involves Hennepin County and Ramsey County. Off the bat, I need to mention, the board is neutral on the smoking policies, but since these bans went into effect, obviously we've been tracking some of the numbers as relates to charitable gambling and the organizations that we license. Hennepin County passed what I would call as a total ban, no smoking permitted in any of the public establishments. Ramsey passed what I would call a modified ban, where if there's more than 50% of non-food sales, then they could apply for an exemption from the smoking ban. Since the bans went into effect April 1st, we've been tracking some of the numbers. As you know, lawful gambling in Minnesota is a $1.4 billion industry. Overall, statewide sales have dropped approximately 2 to 3% when compared to the previous year in lawful gambling. But since the smoking bans were effective, focusing on the counties of Hennepin and Ramsey, we're tracking a decrease in Ramsey County of approximately 10% in gross sales and Hennepin County of approximately 22% in gross sales. At the same time, surrounding counties that are included in this report are showing a slight increase, nothing to make up the loss in Hennepin and Ramsey, but they are showing a slight increase in the activity. Particularly fraternal and veterans organizations are experiencing what appears to be a bigger loss than maybe a local bar, but the numbers are a little sporadic. There's nothing too scientific, but I know one specific related to today's hearing that was one of the focal points as well. And on average, they're dropping roughly 17% on gross sales per site. If we get into some of the numbers just for the one quarter of analysis, veterans organizations, Hennepin County, have dropped roughly $2.2 million in gross sales for the period of April through June. Now, if we annualize that, we're looking at about $9 million in gross sales just for veterans organizations. If we annualize the numbers totally in Hennepin County, we're projecting a decrease in gross sales, charitable gambling of roughly $43 million. Ramsey County will be down approximately $14 million. And when those numbers drop, obviously the state's impacted as well, and there's a projected drop when it comes to the tax receipts of $2.5 million going into the state. Now, one interesting to note, because I know a lot of the focus is on the smoking ban, but we've seen the gas prices. In fact, I'll stick around to hear the other agency's testimony on that. So we went to our counterparts at the lottery. They're obviously at convenience stores, and the expectation is with the gas prices going up, I may see a decrease similar to what we're experiencing in charitable gambling. Surprisingly, they're not. They're right now projecting an increase of 5%. We got into some of the discussion with the number crunchers there, and they equate, they have a formula for consumer confidence and things like that. So it's interesting to note on a comparable product offered for sale, they're actually projecting an increase. Additionally, local government's going to be affected. An example, City of Minneapolis assesses a small fee for local regulations. They also have a local resolution requiring licensed organizations in that city to contribute a portion of their gambling proceeds to help the city. Those will be affected as well, depending upon what the numbers. But the other interesting point is, since the ban, we received one termination request from an organization that's going to get out of the business, and we anticipate a few more. Now, ahead of the smoking ban, the legislature passed some bills that help the charities. We did a number of things affecting rent reform to help save some money. We looked at some expense allowance specifically targeted to help veterans organizations. Those, for the most part, have really helped those organizations. At the same time, there's been allowance for new game ideas, specifically Link Bingo, which has not launched yet, but it's set to launch and could help the organizations in that respect. But for the most part, the numbers we're seeing coming in, specifically Hennepin and Ramsey, it's difficult to ignore. The various reports have in front of you, and I have a tremendous amount of detail if by chance there needs to be a question specifically related to a site. But I attempted to summarize the information that we're tracking, first by county, and then within the county, the particular cities that might be involved. And the latter part of the handout includes some graphic pictures, comparisons, beginning with the month of March. Now, some folks, why did you include March when it didn't have a part of the smoking ban? Well, we wanted to show what the month prior to the implementation of the smoking ban in terms of sales, both previous year and current year, to compare up as we go through the three-month period of actual changes. What I would direct your attention to is...
Mr. Baird, just hold one second. Mr. Baird, is it okay if we have questions on each point as we go? I think that would be helpful. Members forget about them.
No, absolutely.
Representative Silver.
Mr. Chair, just first of all, a comment. The reason probably you're seeing the lottery sales at the gas station going up, we all hope to win the lottery to pay for the gas. But on page 20 of your report, on the March, as you look at that chart, you see that's before the smoking ban. And each from 04 to 05, the only one that had an increase in that was Anoka County. In fact, is a county such as Scott County, which is next to Hennepin County, and saw a big decrease. Have you got, and it continues, as Scott decrease continues on the next four, you would think at least there'd be some switching from Hennepin over to Scott. What do you have any information on why there's a decrease in just about everybody in March?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solbert, the detail in terms of the overall drop in sales, as I had mentioned, approximately 2-3% statewide. Now, in terms of what's happening in Scott County, I know we lost an organization in terms of one site, which, depending upon the size of the county, you lose a site. It definitely affects the numbers. But in terms of...
Scott's a pretty populated county, though.
It is. And yet, when we look at who's lost, that's where on some of the detail, if you look to the page... Let's see. Page 7. You'll see specifically... the cities that are listed there and the differences in terms of numbers. Now, this is, again, for the March through June. It's not just March. But you get a flavor. There's a variety of some have gained, some have lost.
But Mr. Barrett, do you think that may have something to do with proximity to other gambling venues around Shakopee and Savage area? Or is it tough to tell?
Mr. Chairman, that could be a factor, but we don't have any detail, obviously, on the tribal side, the show, or the track, horse track side, card room, that they could be going there. But
When did they start with the horse racing? When does that season? Does anybody know when that starts?
Mr. Chairman, so it ended in Labor Day weekend. Now, when does it start? I'm a little at a loss.
Anyone did any member go bet on the horses? I would like to admit it. Or anybody in the audience know when they start horse racing? April?
May? I don't know. I haven't been out there. But
okay.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Silbert.
In Scott County, Mr. Bennett, I don't see where one went from. These are not state specifics, but town specifics.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, but you did have one that went up, 100% from zero, up.
In Cedar Lake.
In Cedar Lake, yeah, the township. But what I'm questioning is, do you have any kind of information on? You would think that there'd be, if we're relating it to a smoking ban. First of all, in March there was no smoking ban in Hennepin, right?
Correct.
And it went down more in Hennepin County, that's true. But in March, all those counties were down. And as you look at, Wright County and Sherburne County and the next graphs, they have some increases, but they're not dramatic increases. And some of them may be just related to their increase in their population as well, their growth counties. So I'm just wondering if we have some kind of statistics on what's happening for, besides just that one incident. I mean, if you look at Scott, on the last four pages, they're all negative. And that's a county that has big population growth as well. You would think that at least would have, if there's a correlation between a smoking ban in a county to another county, as we've heard on the media, that those that adjacent have seen the increases, I would think we would see that kind of an increase there too.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Tolberg, I think in those sites that are right on county line, we've seen some increases. That's where, if we look at some of the detail of those particular sites that are right there. But to the extent that they're taking, absorbing, that they're all coming across the border, we're not seeing that kind of influx into the other counties.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Barrett.
Get into the handout, the detail. The first number of pages really gets into the numbers reflective for each county and then within that city, followed by the picture version of a monthly comparison from the previous time a year ago, same period, same month, and then continuing through June. And then finishing up what I would say is the last page, page 23, the most recent month that we have the numbers for. Somewhat a graphic illustration primarily of Hennepin and Ramsey County, showing a decrease in gross sales.
Mr. Barrett, any idea in terms of how much the subtraction of revenue going into charitable gaming with the tax code kicking in on the state getting a take of that, how that'll impact the budget? Or Ms. Roberts, do you have any idea? Is there any preliminary estimates for the next biennium of what might be hitting in?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I don't have that at my fingertips,
okay,
but I could find out and let the committee know.
That'd be helpful. Okay, Mr. Barrett, any more testimony for us? For members of the audience, the committee administrator is making copies of this packet, and we'll put them on the table as soon as he gets back for people to look at. Anything further, Mr. Barrett?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay,
Mr.
questions?
Chair.
Representative Silbert?
Mr. Chair, one other question. Do you track also when we made changes in, let's say, the .08 DWI law? From year to year, did that go into effect in August 1st, was it?
.08 did, yes.
.08, people may less spend less time at an establishment because of that? And do you have records that sort of these same paper charts for September and October? Do we see that same kind of decline?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, we don't track that kind of detail. Knowing that the smoking ban was before us, we increased. But everything from a bad Viking game, you know, they are out of the game early, they tend to leave as well. So.
Well, I understand that, but
we're not going to have any revenue early.
But obviously that was a major change in right. state policy that would affect, I think, every business that sells liquor. Or has the potential to have that adverse effect of people sitting there. And if you're not in the establishment, you don't buy charitable gambling. So do you have those kind of statistics for September also?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, we have statistics. I think we don't have the sophistication in terms of what could be the cause. But I think that would be obviously a factor. Other local bars extended their opening, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning. But and that's where, if interested, I mean, we can get right into site specifics in terms of some of the activity, but we don't have the sophistication as far as, you know, a 1 o'clock cutoff versus a 2 o'clock when it comes to sales, but it could be a factor as well.
Okay. Representative Mullery and then Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions. First of all, my restaurants are telling me that they experienced a downturn initially. And now, recently, there's a real upturn, and it's actually better business now than before the smoking ban. And even their customers, people are coming in saying they wouldn't eat there because of that. So people that were real fearsome or afraid last June are telling me the opposite now. Is there any of that happening here, can you tell, or how long would it take to have an effect on that order? Or for people that you say there's not an effect, now I'm hearing from some of my friends in the Legions and VFWs that there is an effect in Hennepin County ones, and that they're going to, in my area, going to Anoka. So how long will it take to really sort this out, what the long-range effect is? Obviously, from the restaurants that told me, it took a few months. That might be quicker than this.
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chairman, we couldn't hear a thing.
That's a point well taken. I can tell that this microphone is on. I almost feel like having the DFL members move over here, if you don't mind, because it's very difficult to hear you. And we'll see about that. I'm hesitant to have it if it's not being recorded or people can't hear and so forth. If you wouldn't mind moving over, Mr. Barrett, go ahead and answer that question and try to filter into your remarks a little bit about what Representative Mullery was asking about, too.
All right. Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, I think the impact is still too early to tell. We basically have one quarter of activity, but talking to some of the counterparts, whether it's out in California or New York, that also has some smoking bans, there is that expectation that business will come back. Now, is it a survival situation where the organization tries to hold on and see a return of the business? I think what you're specifically talking about is the food bar side of things. But right now, for the 3 months of activity, we're not showing that rebound, if there is such a thing, as it relates to charitable gambling. But again, only 3 months into the activity, we're going to be watching come July, August, September, especially as we head into the winter months, when folks leave the patios where there is some smoking allowance and head back indoors. So there's a number of things that are coming into the picture that could affect that.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, one other...
Pull your microphone down just a little bit. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Eureka. I know that there's trends on this, and I don't know how Minnesota trends with the rest of the nation, but there is trends in gambling, up and down, partly on the economy, partly on other things, And so I'm wondering, do you know how that affects it? How are other states here or nationally? Are they in any way up or down, not connected to smoking? And one other question, and maybe there's, you're more into it, you might have some idea on, are people still gambling just in other ways? And part of that may be, I know that Minnesota was always rated in the top five in gambling way back before it was even legal here. So it's a gambling state traditionally. Is there any way that you know what's happening with regard to that money? Is it still being gambled in some way or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, in comparison to some other states, Minnesota is by far number one when it comes to lawful charitable gambling. Second to none. The state of Washington is number two, and they're roughly half where we're at. The example I said earlier as far as the surprise with the increase in lottery sales in Minnesota, 5% increase. Comparable, the industry that we regulate as well as the lottery, the folks that buy lottery tickets, we always talk about going after that discretionary dollar, what might be left over. So when that, the lottery is showing an increase right within our own borders, that tells me there's increased activity going on. But I still think it might be too early to show any kind of a rebound as far as it relates to charitable gambling, where they've had the initial impact. We've heard statewide ban and some of the impacts on that. You know, it's not fair because you can go across the border, things like that. But I really think the only 3 months of history isn't showing us, other than the initial impact, it's definitely had an effect on those two counties. But other states have shown, a drop, and then there's some recovery.
Just like I'm getting in the shorter term from the restaurant owners.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hilty, and then we're going to move on to Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, I was looking at the county-by-county breakdown here, and looking at Washington County, there are some pretty substantial decreases in most of the venues in Washington County, and in fact, if it weren't for a substantial increase in one of them, I think this would even look worse than Hennepin or Ramsey. Is there any explanation for that?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, again, if we look at some of the site comparisons, but overall there's been approximately 2 or 3% drop statewide. And as you can see, they're kind of coming in at an average of just under 2%, which means, so if we did a statewide average, you'd see a number of counties being below the mark where they were last year. But I think when you compare up a Washington County with a Ramsey County of a 2% drop versus 10 or 22%, that's where the variance is coming in that we think is focused on the bans that were passed.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Barrett, you're kind of ignoring my point here. Of course, the average for Washington County, the decrease isn't very much, but there's a significant decrease in all but two of the venues. And the question is, if it weren't for these two, Washington would look pretty bad. It has decreases that actually are greater than a lot of the ones in Hennepin and Ramsey. So the question is, how do we account for those?
Mr. Barrett?
Average is notwithstanding.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, absolutely. And I apologize if I didn't get your question. There's a number of factors that go into this. We look at Newport, for example, and we all know Highway 61 construction has been going on that's had some effect in that respect. But then at the same time, Lakeland Shores and White Bear Lake showing, in the 30% drop. That's where we get into some of the site-specific review analysis to see what might be going on at particular sites, that they've had a change in organization, or we might have suspended an organization due to some infraction. But in terms of the comparison, some are up, some are down. I will credit a lot of the organizations that are on their game plan when it comes to charitable gambling tend to do better, and can anticipate some of the game changes that we've worked with them on.
As Representative De La Forest asked the last question, I'll Mr. Wilson come down and get ready. Representative De La Forest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question that is unrelated to the smoking ban, but I did want to ask it of Mr. Barrett as long as he is here before us today.
Go ahead.
And this relates, Mr. Chairman and members, to the Viking Stadium proposal. There has been a lot of interest and discussion about the 0.75% potential sales tax increase, but what isn't discussed that's contained in the bill that was submitted to the legislature is the option for a 5% food and beverage tax levied across the county. And I wonder, Mr. Barrett, what your opinion is, either personally or the opinion of the board, regarding the institution of a 5% food and beverage tax and the impact that may have on patronage at charitable gaming establishments like My American Legion and Anoka, and therefore on gaming revenues.
Well, that's a tough one, Mr. Barrett. What do you think of that?
Well, no, give us no pity. Chair, with all due respect, I'm living in Ramsey County. I'll stay neutral on both those. You know, could have an impact, absolutely. I think when we talk about that discretionary dollar, if it gets eaten away, however it gets eaten away, whether it's an increased fee, tax, whatever. But again, neutral in terms of any policy, whether it's a tax or a smoking ban, we're simply looking at some of the actual numbers that have come based on some proposed changes in that policy. So I'm not going to give you anything to take back on the board. Or
Mr. Chair, Mr. Barrett maybe needs to join us with an election certificate with an answer like that. Hopefully, Mr.
That's just putting him in a bad spot, though.
Well, hopefully, maybe Mr. Wilson will have will opine on that subject. But really, Mr. Chairman, it's a serious question because, for example, if you take my home American Legion, where I served on the board, so I know about the inner workings of the American Legion and other establishments. I mean, Mr. Wilson knows there's a very beautiful American Legion VFW just across the river in Champlin, which is about a three-minute drive. And so I have a fear that a 5% food and beverage tax could certainly drive Legionnaires across the river to Champlin because many Legionnaires, for example, they're on a fixed income, and many of them tend to be somewhat conservative and populist in their views. And I know at least my fellow Legionnaires in Anoka, certainly out of spite, I could see them driving across the river to save that 5% from going into the pockets of Vikings owner, but I'll leave my comments at that, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for your indulgence.
Okay. Next, we have Mr. King Wilson from Allied Charities of Minnesota. Mr. Barrett's handout is now at the table. If members of the audience would like to take a look at it. I don't know, Mr. Wilson, did you have extra copies of yours, or do we need to make a few copies of those as well?
Mr. Chair, I think it's our copies. They just put
it
on.
Oh, it's your copies. Okay. Yeah. Mr. Wilson's packet is now at the table. Go ahead, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is King Wilson. I'm the Executive Director of Allied Charities. First of all, I would like to thank you for holding this hearing to discuss this important issue. We had two handouts. One is just kind of the calendar year a fact sheet of charitable gambling. You know, we were down about last year about a point and a half. The fiscal year that just closed up, again, Mr. Barrett indicated that's going to be around a 2% drop. This morning, you know, we really wanted to focus on the effects of smoking bans on charitable gambling. I would like to thank Mr. Barrett and the Department of Revenue as they've been doing numbers. They've been supplying them to us. Kind of had an idea what things he was going to give you, and we took the liberty of taking the two counties that are having the biggest negative impact. Actually, the charities are being devastated in Hennepin and Ramsey, and this packet contains the site-by-site within the county within each city. I think if you look on the front page of this, when you look, you know, we do at this point only have roughly 90 days worth of data that has been submitted. You know, we do have three or four other folks this morning that would like to testify from a couple different venues that they actually have a little bit more information as far as what happened in July and August, and I can tell you it's not any prettier than what you see here. But that it, indeed, the smoking bans that have gone into place in both Ramsey and Hennepin County are having, you know, are causing our sales to plummet. I think there are some differences, and you know, Representative Mullery, one thing that I think you should be aware, you know, there's roughly in the state 1,400 plus organizations doing gambling in 3,100 sites. I think, and actually, we're hearing the same thing about a lot of the restaurants. You know, our things dropped for a bit and then are coming back. However, charitable gambling is primarily done in bars in the state of Minnesota, and I don't think you're probably hearing from your bars that their sales are coming back. Certainly, when you look at Hennepin County in April, there was a 17.5% drop. In May, there was a 22.7% drop. In June, there was a 25.6% drop. You look at Ramsey County with the partial ban, again, 4.75, 10.45, 14.44. The numbers are going the wrong way, and this is at a time when the weather is being, we've had, I think, a good summer. We're starting off to a good fall. But at some point, depending upon who the organization and what city they are, whether folks, when the weather turns, will continue to go out on outdoor patios, where, you know, they're now going there because they know they can go outside and have a beverage, have a meal, maybe play some pull tabs and smoke. Certainly, I think come January, people aren't going to be going there knowing they can go outside to partake in those other things. Doesn't mean they won't run out and have a quick smoke, but I think what we will see is we're going to see a continued drop, if not a greater drop, and at that point, I think we might see some more people going across the county lines. What Representative Delaforest talked about, I think we're seeing kind of the same thing right now. Champion Legion, if you get in and look at the specific numbers these last 3 months that are here, they have dropped significantly. Anoka American Legion has jumped up some. So with the smoking ban, we're seeing people go across the river. And maybe if that ultimate tax, if you as a legislature should allow that to happen, maybe it'll just be an equilibrium when we're done here. That I'm not sure. But, you know, our business has been pretty stable for many, many, many years. Up a point, down a point. And we've never seen anything like this that's occurring in Hennepin and Ramsey County. And it's going to cost the state millions of dollars in taxes. It's going to cost the regulatory agency tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in the fees that they collect. And most importantly, where I think we don't know, and that's where I think the other testifiers will be able to speak a little specifically, you know, when you look at the $72 million that went for the charitable contributions, you know, that's, we're up to about $2.4 billion overall. Unfortunately, now $1 billion of it is in taxes. But when the sales drop 25%, unfortunately, we're going to see the bottom line that we have available for lawful purposes is likely to be even a greater decrease, because when our sales drop, if you, that pull tab booth in a VFW is open from noon to midnight, when your sales decrease, your expenses don't change as much. Maybe you have to sit back and say, well, we have to cut, maybe we can only stay open until 10 o'clock. The problem is then you cut into further sales. So we're going to see, again, many millions of dollars for the bottom line, the worthy programs and projects that these various organizations, at least in Hennepin and Ramsey County, support, is not going to have funds available. I know that's going on. These organizations are struggling right now. I hope there's a rebound. I hope there's a point in time where it will come back. But right now, the indicators are downward, downward, downward. And what's different is in our state, as opposed to, say, California or New York, or perhaps, as Representative Solberg talked about, the effects of ultimately what the change in the blood alcohol, which just took effect, and obviously the August numbers have been submitted to revenue, but they haven't been processed yet. But those are statewide things, and there's a difference. What we have with smoking bans in this state is this city does it one way, which maybe is different than what their county is doing, and then the next county or city over is doing something completely different, and this hodgepodge that we have is not working. I'm not going to tell you that I'm a non-smoker. I'm not a huge fan that the state or that the government should be involved in telling businesses whether they should allow smoking. But unfortunately, right now in this state, government is. And at this point, whether it's cities, townships, or counties, they're doing it, and they're doing it in this hodgepodge fashion, and it's causing, it's just, within the areas that are putting these bans in, it's being devastating to those charities. We're seeing more and more do this. Beltrami has one that recently went into effect. We haven't really seen the number change. They have you can't smoke up till 8 o'clock in the bars there, but after 8 o'clock you can. That's going to be phased out over the next year. Meeker County is soon to start one. You know, so it's not just a metro deal. We're starting to see it in other parts of the state. You know, it's causing a real negative effect on those that have had it. It's creating some winners and losers, but as Mr. Barrett alluded, while the decreases in Hennepin and Ramsey are significant, counties around it, for the most part, have seen an upswing, but not all the money is going elsewhere. You know, it's good that it's up. That's bucking the trend where right now, again, we've been down a couple points, I think because of the economy, because of gas prices, because of other things. But these numbers that are occurring in Hennepin and Ramsey, the only thing that's different about those two counties since April 1st when these numbers are coming out is the smoking bans. And I think what's nice about Hennepin and Ramsey is because they both do it differently, you can see that how a smoking ban is implemented does have a big impact on how charitable gambling, bar, and all the other sales that are involved. But, you know, our sales have been, you know, depending upon how you implement it, it's clearly makes a major difference. But these charities, you can get in and look at the sites in each one of those. Again, when you have a 21, when you have a 10%, 15% decline, that's a major shift and something that's occurred in our industry. And it's just, you know, our sales have plummeted in those areas, and it's devastating to those charities.
Okay. We have a couple questions from members. In order to get through our agenda in a fairly timely way, and we'd like to wrap up 12:15 or so, we're going to try to keep things as abbreviated as possible. Mr. Wilson, do you have some VF groups or someone that was coming in to also testify?
Mr. Chair, we had four individuals, okay. Jim Newcomer from the VFW and the Mock Pup Tent in Bloomington, Judy Foslin from the Church of Incarnation in Minneapolis, Dick Cole from the American Legion in Osseo, and Jim Algio with the Bloomington Crime Prevention that, you know, we'd like an opportunity, and we did, you know, they're going to try and keep it to 2 or 3 minutes each. Again, they have a little bit more current numbers.
Members, could we let them testify, and then we'll have the whole group there for questions? So, Mr. Wilson, just
Mr.
Newcomer, Ms. Foslin, Mr. Cole, Mr. Algio, if you could come on down and just occupy the chairs up there. Good morning.
Morning.
If you could each identify yourself with your name and whatever title of whatever organization you're with, and then just give us a brief testimony, that'd be very helpful. And we're going to hold questions from members until you're all finished with your testimony. Good morning.
My name is Jim Newcomer. I'm the past commander of Everett McClay, Post 1296 in Bloomington, VFW Post. I'm the current gambling manager there. They've asked me to testify. The state has asked me to come in and speak on behalf of the VFW, although I can only address the specifics of our post.
Go ahead.
I want to thank you all for the opportunity to address you today on behalf of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. While I'll be speaking for all of our posts in Minnesota, I will be able to address only the specifics of Everett McClay. You do have, I think, the statistics on the other VFW posts in Hennepin County, and they should speak for themselves. To begin with, I want to dispel the myth that the VFW and similar organizations are nothing but good old boys clubs, where the members get together and drink and reminisce about the war experiences, etc. Nothing could be further from the truth. Instead, the Veterans of Foreign Wars is an organization whose primary function is the continued service to our country by keeping a spotlight on veterans' issues and providing aid and support to our service people throughout the world, supporting youth with scholarship funding activities, patriotic education, as well as providing aid to the needy and elderly that are often overlooked by society and our government. Unlike many that have never served our country, the members of the Veterans of Foreign Wars and American Legion have continued to give back to our society with little or no reward other than the personal satisfaction of knowing they continue to make a difference. The success of these organizations in many cases depends on the success of charitable gambling to not only accomplish these goals but to survive. And it is a critical situation. I brought with me the specifics of our post, and I believe there's enough to pass around here, Jim.
This is for your particular post, Mr. Newcomer?
Yes, it is. Okay. And it's only for, we hold two licenses there at our post. 150 is the VFW's license. License 555 is for the Military Order of the Cootey, which is operates gambling on Sunday only. That's the honor degree of the VFW. But I didn't, because I'm not the gambling manager for the Military Order of the Cootie, I really don't have their figures to discuss with you. However, on the bottom down here, it says, I did take a look at June. It was on the report that was provided by the gambling board, and they were down 62% in June. So they're actually taking a more severe bite than we are at the Post. But as you can see, in April and May, we started to fail in April, obviously, with the smoking ban. We're down 24%, went to 42%, 38% in June. In July, it came back up to 23%, but in August, we went down again to 39%. And one of the reasons that we were able to actually maintain it as well as we have is the figures the previous year don't reflect that this year we've had the opportunity to cater some events and do some things that we weren't able to do last year. So not only in the gambling, but also the other revenues, the alcohol, the food, the other revenues are down considerably. I would say an average of 20%. And I know that the other posts in the state, Hennepin County, and even throughout the state, are experiencing, at least in Hennepin County, are experiencing similar drops, some even greater than our post. We're fortunate in that we're the second largest post in the state. We have a little cushion there. We have some money in gambling that we can use if we need to for these funds. As an example of that, this past month we gave $10,000 to the Katrina Relief Fund in New Orleans. The problem is that with this loss over the five-month period of $314,000, we lost approximately $15,000 that we would be able to use to either sustain our operation, help pay the overhead and things, plus make the charitable contributions. Not only that, I think as a rule of thumb, 4% of the gross sales are taxes, and that's taxes that you people didn't collect out of our post, approximately $12,000 that weren't collected from 1296. It is something that has to be addressed. Not only the gambling, but the smoking ban. I'm not for or against this. Well, actually, I am against it. I'll be honest with you. I'm a smoker. And I think it's a terrible infringement, especially on the charitables and the private clubs, that it was passed under the guise of saving the public. These posts are not open to the general public. Everything that's done in those posts goes across the membership floor and is voted on one way or another. If there's a post that doesn't want smoking and the membership doesn't want it, the majority of the membership, they won't smoke in that post. It's never occurred in our case, but that's pretty much the way we feel.
Okay.
I'll let somebody else speak as we're trying to get out.
We need to keep it brief because we have members who are on pretty strict time frames and want to ask questions and things. So we'll move on to, I have next on the docket, Ms. Fosland.
Good morning. My name is Judy Fosland. I work for the Church of the Incarnation. It's an inner-city church in South Minneapolis. Charitable gambling is a major asset to our ministries for the poor. We support a major food shelf, a major clothing shelf. We supply winter coats, school supplies, help and shelter costs, gas money, and all types of emergency help. Charitable monies help close the gaps that our small parish can't cover. We do fundraisers off and on through the year to try and defray the cost for Second Harvest where we purchase our food for the food shelf. This is not enough. We have three sites in Minneapolis, three in St. Paul. The St. Paul sites have remained fairly steady, but our Minneapolis sites, tracking the net revenue, because these guys got all the big numbers. I got the money we take to the bank. And for the 5 months in 2004 opposed to the 5 months in 2005, we didn't take $59,000 net to the bank for those three sites. Due to this drop, we have eliminated a management staff position. We've cut operational hours at sites. We've laid off employees. We employ quite a few senior citizens that use this type of job to cover their health costs. The type of employment is dependent on tips from customers, and when the bar patronage dwindles, there are no customers. Two of our sites are in northeast Minneapolis. These are right on the border of Anoka. Guess whose business has doubled? The northeast bars are all basically small neighborhood bars that my own father frequented. They've been there for years, and many are family-owned. They still have the old neighborhood atmosphere. Keeping these bars alive, I believe, will benefit the residents of Minneapolis far more than the government will, dictating as to what is best for people who should be able to make their own decisions. These segregated bans in the whole state of Minnesota are totally unfair and have caused more hardships on the small businessman and even more on the charitables that depend on these bars to fund all the good work they do. If this continues, more and more charities will have to shut down. The impact will be devastating as you see revenues not only to the charities but also to the cities and states drop dramatically. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to move on to Mr. Cole with Osseo.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good morning. My name is Dick Kolb, and for the past 17 years, I've been the gambling manager for the Osseo Maple Grove American Legion. The year 2004 was a banner year for our organization, with pull tab and paddle wheel sales of $3,400,000. However, due to a recent ordinance passed in Hennepin County, we will be fortunate to achieve $2,500,000 in sales for this year. By the way, Osseo is located just 5 miles south of the city of Anoka, a city not affected by the Hennepin County Ordinance. By comparison, for the 3 months of 2005 prior to the ordinance, our sales was $845,490 versus a 2004 sales figure of $934,915, a difference of $89,425. However, it is important that I point out that during 9 of those weeks in 2004, our post hosted the State American Legion bowling tournament. Otherwise, the figures for the 2 years would have been much closer. By comparison, for the 5 months since the inception of the Hennepin County Ordinance, our sales have been $985,637 versus $1,369,077 for the same period in 2004, a difference of $383,440. Our American Legion post has an outdoor smoking area on our patio. Smokers are allowed to bring their drinks and pull tabs to this area. We also have only the second indoor smoking area approved by Hennepin County Health Department. This is used on days with inclement weather. But even with these two conveniences, smokers feel uncomfortable and have gone elsewhere. As an added encouragement, we have introduced more food and drink specials to little avail. This loss in revenue will result in $12,000 fewer dollars available for donations to our community projects for this year. Our American Legion supports programs such as American Legion Baseball, School Safety Patrol, Boys and Girls State, Boy Scout, and several other worthwhile programs. Any help you may provide to alleviate our situation would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kolb. Next up, Mr. is it Algio?
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm Jim Algio. I'm the current president of Limited Crime Prevention Association, following a long list of public servants such as our police chief, John Locks in Bloomington, and our mayor, Gene Winstead. One of our council members, Dave Abrams, is also on that board and at one time. And we run Southtown Bingo. Southtown Bingo was our charitable gambling operation to help fund many of our projects, such as the Bloomington Police Explorers, the National Night Out, Galaxy Youth Center, all public safety-related agencies and individuals in Bloomington. We closed Southtown Bingo 2 weeks ago, laid off 15 people. Most of them were part-time, mostly working mothers who have, this is their second job, and they use that to pay for child care, things of that nature. Hopefully the clerk has passed out the information. You take a look at the graph, it's pretty representative of what's happened at our shop. The smoking man literally just took the rug off from underneath us. And we got to a point where we just could no longer make payroll and make our commitments to our landlord and our banks, and so we closed the doors on it. We know it's directly related to the smoking ban because 70% of our customers were smokers, and they have stayed away in droves. And one of the things I want you to take a look at as you consider the smoking ban statewide, and I know you're going to be doing that, is that was mentioned before that the 4% of our gross receipts end up going into the state of Minnesota. $432,000 in Hennepin County lost the state taxes in just 3 months. 5% or 5.2% now, I believe, goes out to be donated out. Right now, that's about $550,000 that we did not donate in Hennepin County in the months of April, May, and June. And one last thing I want you to understand is a word called comorbidity. It's a relationship between gambling, drinking, and smoking. And I'm not going to be a proponent for any of these things, but there is an interrelationship, and when you consider these bills, this bill, you should consider the comorbidity factor, because there is an interrelationship, and it's not been considered in the past. And I thank you.
Okay, members, we need to move along quickly. Do we have questions? Representative Hilty had a question for Mr. Wilson or one of the panel members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that it's a question for anybody. Maybe for the committee. It seems to me there are two separate things going on here, two factors that we're considering, and that was just brought up in the last testimony. We have the question of revenues from charitable gambling, and we also, of course, have the benefits to charities. As far as the revenues are concerned, I'm wondering if money is not spent on full tabs or in any of these ways, it's going to be spent someplace else. If you don't buy $100 worth of pull tabs and you go out and buy $100 worth of something else, and hopefully it won't be food, because hopefully you haven't been going without food in order to buy pull tabs in the first place, that would be subject to a 6.5% sales tax, most likely. In terms of revenues to the state, that would be more than the 4% that we forego in the lack of sales for poll tabs. So I'm wondering, I don't suppose that there's any way to actually study this at this point, but I'm kind of wondering if in terms of revenues to the state that wouldn't kind of offset.
Good question. I'm not sure that anyone here has the answer for that one. Representative DeLaForest and then Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, I just had a brief comment for the witnesses, and I really appreciate the numbers. They're very important, but I just encourage you as well to tell the rest of the story in terms of the faces and the organizations behind the charitable contributions that you make. Not a lot of voters or citizens know about Veterans on the Lake or the contributions to local civic organizations, and so in the future, as you move forward in your quest, I would encourage you to share with your local elected officials and your legislators what it means, for example, for reduced contributions to Veterans on the Lake, for example, and the good work that they do. And you said, I thank you for the numbers, but also I think it's important to tell that story as well. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Mullery, and then we're going to move to Mr. Puglisi quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would repeat what Representative De La Forest said. I think we all recognize the great work that is done by Legion VFW and all the other groups, Lions and whatever. And what Representative Hilty brought up is the same as on the stadium, the numbers that are addition, we lose on something else. My question, though, is to, and I'm sorry I forget your name, but from Incarnation, I'm well aware of Incarnation. My mom taught there, so know it for many years. But my understanding, isn't the Archdiocese trying to get us off of that? That's what I was told by our pastor. We had to cut it out. St. Alphonsus, which was the largest in the Archdiocese at raising funds, has cut back almost totally on their...
No, there's been no input from the Archdiocese.
There hasn't been?
This is such a struggling parish that without the gambling, they couldn't do the food shelf for paid people. The beautiful 100-year-old church.
I know some of the... Yeah, well, I know I've been in the church many times, in the school many times. But I was told by a number of priests that there is.
And there hasn't been any any notice for that at all.
Okay, we'll have Mr. Puglisi. Mr. Puglisi, if you could come down. Thank you, witnesses, for your time this morning. We appreciate it. Mr. Puglisi is with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and give us some closing comments on the topic.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for taking up this important issue. I don't really have a lot to share with the comments that have been made this morning, although we have been receiving a lot of information from the various posts that do have gaming. And as you've heard here, it has impacted them significantly. What Representative DeForest did raise is something we really need to take into consideration. A lot of the money that is raised as a result of this charitable gaming goes to very good causes throughout the state. And as a result of their revenues being down, a lot of these people that count on this revenue are no longer going to be able to provide those services in the community. We've been working closely with the leadership from the various organizations to come up with some things that possibly can be done. And one of the things that keeps getting mentioned is a possible exemption. I don't want to put any personal views on this. I'm not a smoker myself. But I do believe what was commented on earlier, that these are private clubs. They do have the ability to monitor themselves and to vote what they would like to see happen within their clubs. I think we should leave it up to them. Let them decide if they want smoking at private clubs. These people have, gone to battle to defend the liberties that we enjoy. And to tell them that they can't smoke in their private clubs, I think, is wrong. That's more of a personal standpoint. I am open for questions, but as I said, I don't have a lot to add with regards to the numbers.
Representative Muller.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Real quick question. I hate to do this to you, but I would definitely disagree with you that they're private clubs. There aren't many that I've ever seen that aren't open to somebody who wants to come in and spend money. And I know that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Muller, you are correct. They do open them up to the public, but they are considered private clubs.
Any further question from committee members? Thank you, Mr. Puglisi. Does anyone in the audience have a desperate urging to come down and need to testify? Okay, thank you. We're going to move on to our next. That's good food for thought, by the way. We will move on to our next topic, which is gas prices, particularly relating to how it affects the state budget, how our state fleet is operated. We have Mr. Morris here from the Department of Transportation, Ms. Finger from the Department of Administration, unless there wouldn't be two Tim Morrises, would there? And then we have John Scharfdelig from MnDOT, Mary Ellison from Public Safety, and Dave Schiller from the DNR. Why don't we have everyone, since Mr. Morris is on here twice, why don't we just have everyone come down, if you would, please?
I can speak for these folks.
Okay.
Unless there's questions specific.
Okay, if we have specific questions, wonderful. Okay. Mr. Morris, the question has come up from members of the public, et cetera, in regard to how has the state budget been impacted by gasoline prices, and how does the agency procure, store, manage its gasoline versus maybe how other people manage it, and are we planning on having enormous deficiencies in our agency budgets because of this? Is it something that's been managed through contracting, et cetera, et cetera? So if you could walk us through that. You have a handout, apparently, and we'll go through that. We're going to try to get through this topic in the next, say, 15 to 25 minutes, and then we're going to spend about 10, 15 minutes on bridge aesthetics as well, and we'll be wrapped up by then. Mr. Morris, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Tim Morris. I work for the Department of Administration in the Travel Management Division. Thank you for inviting me to talk to the committee today. Fleet management is one of my favorite subjects, and fuel is always a controversial and interesting topic. It has been especially so this summer. Agency people are here to help present information. I believe we went through the folks that are here from admin. Jackie Finger is the contract specialist for vehicles and fuel. John Scharfdelig is here from transportation, fleet manager. Dave Schiller from the Department of Natural Resources is the fleet manager. And Deputy Commissioner Mary Ellison is here from the Department of Public Safety. The next couple of decades in fleet management will be the most interesting we have seen since the advent of the automobile. Change is coming. We'll be living through the period of time where petroleum is cast aside in favor of another fuel. Do we know what will be coming? No. Hydrogen is a bright star on the horizon, but it's just a shining star, and the horizon is far from where we are right now. Change does not come without pain. This summer we've begun to experience some pain in the area of fuel pricing. We're here today to talk about fuel pricing and what the state government is doing to manage the effect of fuel pricing on state government operations. We're going to cover how the state purchases fuel, both bulk and retail. We're going to talk about the increase in the cost of fuel, how it affects the state. We'll touch a little bit on fleet size and the cost impact. And we'll look a little bit at what agencies are doing to manage these impacts, both on the long and the short term. We all know that the state of Minnesota is impacted by the climbing price of fuel, just as the public and private sector companies are. The increase in the price of fuel has been dramatic this year, but if we look at history, the price of fuel has been climbing for the last several years. Increasing fuel costs challenge state of Minnesota transportation fleet managers. The state purchases fuel both in bulk and through the retail market. State agency vehicles are scattered throughout greater Minnesota. Most of these vehicles are headquartered in locations with easy access to retail fuel. In these locations, fuel is purchased through a retail vendor in the local community. The Admin Travel Management Division leases approximately 2,000 automobiles and light-duty vehicles to state agencies and political subdivisions. All of these vehicles normally purchase fuel through the local retail market. The Department of Public Safety operates in a very similar fashion, buying fuel through local vendors. DNR has a number of quite small bulk tanks in locations where fuel is not readily accessible from retail vendors. However, most, about 85% of DNR fuel, is purchased through the local retail community. The MnDOT operation is more centrally focused, with district headquarters serving as a home parking and fueling locations for many vehicles. This type of operation lends itself to bulk fueling. Even so, MnDOT still relies heavily on local fuel vendors, purchasing about 50% of its fuel through the retail network. MnDOT typically has a bulk tank, a gasoline, and a diesel tank at a district headquarters location. On the retail side of purchasing, the state of Minnesota has a contract in place with Rite Express, a fuel credit card company. Rite Express cards are used at local vendors to purchase both gasoline and diesel fuel. Rite Express is responsible for making certain that federal tax for gasoline are removed from the billing before it reaches the state. Due to tax laws, the state has been responsible for seeking reimbursement for diesel fuel tax. I believe recent tax law changes are going to enable the state to move this task and responsibility to Rite Express as well. The state pays the retail price of fuel less the appropriate federal tax. Rite Express offers discounts for prompt payment and for good customer status. On the bulk side of fuel purchasing, the state contracts for fuel and delivery to state locations. Bulk fuel deliveries are generally also from local fuel vendors. Most of the bulk fuel purchased by the state is diesel fuel. Typically, there are currently 8 contract vendors throughout Minnesota that supply bulk diesel to the state. The pricing is based on the daily rack price plus a bid constant, which includes vendor markup and delivery. 5 contract vendors currently supply bulk gasoline to the state. Competitively bid contracts typically run for a year with an option to extend. How does the current fuel pricing affect the state? State agencies use vehicles as work tools to perform various job functions. If we stop and think about it, we can picture vehicles being used to plow snow, perform law enforcement functions, aid in wildfire suppression, perform human services functions, perform agriculture inspections, and they're involved in many services to the citizens of Minnesota. The on-highway fleet consists of many differing types of vehicles, ranging from automobiles to heavy trucks. There are approximately 8,000 vehicles in the state fleet. Of these, approximately 1,700 are medium-duty and heavy-duty trucks. Of the remaining 6,500, approximately 2,300 are automobiles, the rest being light trucks, pickup trucks, and vans. In general, state agencies purchase about 4.9 million gallons of gasoline annually and about 3.4 million gallons of diesel fuel. The average retail cost of gasoline in fiscal year 2005 was $1.97 per gallon. The retail cost of diesel in fiscal year 2005 was $2.02. Thus far in 2006, we're about a quarter into it. The price for gasoline is $2.52 and diesel is $2.49. These are retail prices. If this 26% increase remains throughout the fiscal year, it translates into approximately a $4.2 million expense increase for state agencies. That's kind of the size of the hurdle we're looking at if things continue in the direction that they're going. What is the state doing to manage this issue? The state is managing the issue on two levels, the short-term level and the long-term level. The state is not thinking that this issue will be self-correcting or that fuel prices are likely to fall back to the levels that we've seen in previous years. It is the thinking of the state that this issue is here with us for the long term. The state is doing some short-term management by reducing travel where possible. The use of video conferencing and technological alternatives to travel are taking place instead of actual physical travel. The state is purchasing more alternative fuel. The price of E85 has most recently been rather unstable. However, during the summer, we typically saw E85 30 to 70 cents per gallon less than 87-octane gasoline. We are encouraging and insisting that drivers take advantage of this lower-priced fuel. Using E85 has the side benefit of helping our state economy by reinvesting our fuel dollars in our state instead of sending them elsewhere. TCA has been an example agency in promoting E85 use. On the bulk side of the picture, the state is managing the purchase of fuel through cycle timing. MnDOT is very focused on purchasing fuel at the low points in the pricing cycle and avoiding the need to purchase when the price is spiking. Filling bulk tanks when prices are low and purchasing absolute minimal quantities of fuel when the price is spiking has been an effective way for MnDOT to manage bulk fuel purchases. In the long term, the state is allowing only E85 capable and very fuel efficient vehicles to be included in the purchasing contract for light duty vehicles. This makes it easy for agencies to choose vehicles that will help conserve fuel during all of the years the vehicle remains active in the state fleet. Removing less efficient vehicles from the contract makes it much more difficult for gas guzzlers to find their way into the fleet. The state is promoting the use of very high efficient vehicles, including gas electric hybrids, 100% electric vehicles, and even bicycles in appropriate circumstances. DNR has been on the forefront in these areas. DNR would like to note that it would be helpful if we could operate electric vehicles on city streets, neighborhood electric vehicles. I think you'll hear about these in the upcoming session. We're one of the few states that does not allow this to happen. Executive Order 04-10 calls for the state to move away from dependence on petroleum fuels. It's our goal to reduce gasoline use 50% and petroleum diesel use 25% by the year 2015. This is a very tall order. Being a fleet manager, it's a really tall order. However, all good fleet managers now more than ever understand that it is vitally important to become less dependent on petroleum fuels. The state has assembled a team, the Smart Fleet Committee, to address this issue and to lead the state away from petroleum dependence. Smart Fleet includes representatives from Agriculture, Commerce, PCA, PNR, MnDOT, the American Lung Association, and ADMIN. Smart Fleet has been instrumental in initiating a fleet management information system that can be shared among state agencies. Smart Fleet has opened up communication lines that were formerly difficult or even non-existent between agency fleet operations. Smart Fleet has begun to focus direction for fleet management in the state. All of the members are very dedicated individuals and very focused on working in a way that moves the state forward as a whole. There will be reporting from Smart Fleet to the governor's office and to the legislature as progress is made through the 10-year period. This will be an interesting, challenging, and exciting 10 years. We have concerns regarding fuel pricing in the future, and I would like to share a few of those with you. Increasing demand from developing countries will have a lasting impact on fuel prices. China, India, and other developing countries will cause the demand for petroleum to rise. Production of petroleum is limited, and we all know when we have increasing demand and limited production, we end up with higher prices. Weather-related supply disruptions are becoming more critical to fuel pricing. This summer has been a prime example of the effects of a weather-related price spike experience. Because the supply is very close to the ongoing demand, any unexpected disruption causes price spiking. Changing fuels. Changes in fuel requirements will have an effect on fuel pricing. Moving to low-sulfur gasoline and ultra-low-sulfur diesel will help us clean up our environment. This is something we all want to do. However, it will not be done without cost. And finally, federal regulations. Regulations passed on to us by the federal government are also of a concern. The new Energy Policy Act will bring a new set of requirements for states to follow. Again, energy independence is something that we all want and that we all work toward. However, it will not be done without cost. In conclusion, we've talked about how the state purchases fuel both in retail and in bulk. We've discussed the impact of increasing fuel costs on the state in general. We touched on fleet size and dollars spent for fuel. We've discussed short-term management of fuel costs as well as longer-term management. We ended by touching on the governor's commitment to move away from petroleum dependence and briefly discussing concerns for costs in the future. I'd like to thank you for asking me to come and talk about fuel today. If any of my agency colleagues would like to add to what I have said, I would encourage them to come down and do so. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're all here to answer questions for you.
Okay, Mr. Morris, I have Representative Pepin Mullery for starters. Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I do have probably two or three questions.
Go ahead.
If that would be okay with you. Mr. Morris, I'm very interested in this article because I'm extremely interested in the minimum gas markup law that was enacted in 2001. Are you familiar?
I am not intimately familiar with that law, no.
Well, the minimum gas markup law says that the retail locations where gasoline is dispensed into passenger automobiles must charge the price plus the average price of the terminal from which the most recent supply of gasoline delivered to the retail location was acquired, plus all applicable state and federal excise taxes and fees, plus the lesser of 6% or 8 cents. So when I go to buy a gallon of gasoline, I know that the gas station is charging a minimum price of at least 8 cents or 6 cents above their rack price. So what I'm wondering, when you talked about the Wright Express card and you said that the tax was removed, would that minimum markup law apply to states purchase gasoline? I'm assuming it does.
The state pays, Mr. Chairman and committee members, the state pays the price on the pump. Yes, all of the charges are funneled through Wright Express, and Wright Express is contracted with the state to take care of the fuel tax arrangement between the federal government and the state of Minnesota, but there is no, to the best of my knowledge, all of what you said applies.
Okay. That's very helpful. And then I see on the sheet that you have here.
Yes.
You list out that the state consumes approximately 4.9 million gallons of gasoline annually and 3.4 million gallons of diesel fuel annually. And I'm specifically interested in that portion that is retail, not the bulk portion. You did lay out that state agencies pay buy their gas at retail vendors, as do public safety, and that DNR is about 85% and MnDOT is about 50%. And I'm wondering if it would be possible for you to get me information that specifically says by agency how much of the gas that is purchased is retail.
I can certainly try, Mr. Chairman, committee members, I can certainly try to get that information.
Yeah,
I don't have it with me today, but I will see what I can find out and get back to you.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if you'd indulge me, I'd like to talk a little bit about why this is important. If I were to assume the 4.9 million gallons of gasoline and the 4.9 million gallons of gasoline and the $3.4 million of gasoline was all purchased retail, and I understand that it's not, but let's just assume 100% of it were. If gas prices were just 2 cents less per gallon if we remove the minimum gas markup law, as my bill would do, the state would save, in my estimation, according to my math, about $166,000 per year just by not having to pay that extra 2 cents. Of course, if 4 cents were saved on that, the numbers would be much higher. So, Mr. Chair, I just have a comment for the committee I'd like to make. And my comment is that my bill, House File 2003, I did not receive a hearing in that in Commerce Committee last year, but I think it's really important. I think it's important to state government because with gas up as high as $3 a gallon in recent months, and I'm sure that will increase again as we go through these hurricanes and our oil reserves. I believe that, you know, in addition to the fact that the anti-competitive gas pricing markup bill that was passed in 2001, in addition to being harmful to consumers, I think it's also harmful to state agencies. So, Mr. Chair, I would request that you would give my bill a hearing coming forward, because I think that there is some money saving here that we could accomplish if we were to eliminate that law that was enacted in 2001. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Pepin. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I tried to follow. You gave us so many facts. I may have missed it, but what is the effect of the requirements and maybe looking at more requirements of the state using biodiesel? I didn't, maybe you said that in dollars, but I didn't catch it.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I really didn't talk about biodiesel. The biodiesel, the 2% biodiesel mandate becomes effective at the end of this month. And we really, I can't speak from experience because it hasn't happened yet, what kind of effect that will have on pricing. I'm really not sure. I don't expect that it will have a large impact, but I can't say because it hasn't happened yet what the exact impact will be.
Okay. Are there any other questions from committee members before we move on to our last topic? Any burning desire of members in the audience to testify on this subject? Okay. Mr. Morris, you'll be our contact or our central contact if we have questions on fuel purchasing.
Mr. Chairman,
we'll have some more.
Thank you.
Okay, lastly, we have a little discussion about aesthetic programs and guidelines for transportation. Is there someone from the Department of Transportation here that would like to come down? And Representative Krenke asked that we have this on the agenda. It's some information that's come up lately in television. Do you want to identify whoever is going to be coming down? Identify yourself and your title and just give us a little very brief overview of what MnDOT is doing with this program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Dan Dorgan. I'm the state bridge engineer for MnDOT. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have a handout of our policy. If I can distribute that to the committee. I will try to remain brief. I know you are running low on time, but I think there are three items I'd like to cover quickly. One would be the purpose of the policy. Secondly, the policy itself. And then, lastly, the specific application of the policy, how we apply it to ensure we are restrained and fiscally responsible with our application on bridge aesthetics. And first of all, turning to the purpose of the policy then, I think this really stems back to the 1980s. We began hearing increased desire by cities and residents throughout Minnesota, and this is not just a Twin Cities issue, but this is across the state as we deal with cities. We heard increasing input regarding the aesthetics of our designs. And as part of our public involvement process, we take input from the public, and we're often asked, what will the project look like, and in particular, the bridges. Bridges are a highly visible piece of the landscape, significant impact on the committee, on the community, and they do last a long time. They're there for 75 years, so what we build is fairly permanent fixture within a city. So communities had a desire that the highway project would be an asset, certainly rather than an eyesore to their community. And there was a desire not to have starkly functional structures, but to have, again, something that was an asset to the community. So to address that input, we have devoted more attention in the last 20 years to aesthetics and the design. And the document that I circulated is a reprint of 9 pages out of what is known as our Guidelines for Cooperative Construction Projects. And within that is a policy on bridge aesthetics and actually aesthetic participation in general. And interestingly, that policy was specifically developed to place reasonable limits on the amount that MnDOT spends on aesthetics, in recognition that our resources for transportation projects are limited statewide. And we needed to place limits so as we dealt with cities, we were dealing with them consistently throughout the state. So turning to the policy specifics, and one of the points I'd like to make early on, many of the bridges we build have little or no increased costs due to aesthetics, because the increased attention is not warranted. They may be bridges that are not visible. There's no residents by these structures. Motorists really can't see the structure, and there's no ped use. So it's certainly not a case of where all bridges are increasing in cost due to this. But the policy is 9 pages. Typically, it's wordy. I'd turn your attention, if you would, to page 5. And I've in the lower right-hand corner, I've placed the numbering on the pages. Page 5 lists, and it's the paragraph is the level of impact. And what we've done is we look at our projects and categorize them into level A, level B, or level C, with differing levels of participation depending on the importance of the project. A level A project would be a major project, something where the aesthetics were particularly significant. It would have a high visual impact on the community. It may be in a sensitive area from an environmental or historic perspective. To tell the truth, we really haven't done any level A bridge projects, I think, since the policy was developed. But to give you an example, I would say if the High Bridge in St. Paul was to be replaced today, in my mind, that would be a level A project. It's dominant on the skyline of St. Paul, very visible and very much part of the fabric of the city through there. So I'm just trying to give you a sense of what level A might be. Level B is typically involves trunk highway corridors where we're working in either a rural city or in an urban center. These would be structures also in parks or over waterways where we have a lot of public use. And level B is probably one of the common levels for a lot of our corridor projects throughout the state. And the last level, the lowest designation was level C, where there's fairly minimal requirements as far as aesthetic participation. Now, with each of those, then, is tied an amount that we are willing to invest. And those are shown on page 8 of the policy, if you could bear with me and refer to those, to that table on page 8. The level A projects, and under the bridge column there, it's listed as the maximum is 15%, but not to exceed $3 million. So we do place a cap on each of these levels. So if it were to be a $100 million bridge, it does not become 115, as might have been reported on Almanac. Instead, there is a $3 million limit. So with each of these, we place a cap on it, and you can see similarly on the level B structures, the limit there is 7%, not to exceed $300,000. And this is the bridge itself. It's not the total project, so the 7% isn't a blanket number put across the project. It's for each individual bridge, so I wanted to make that clear to the committee. Some examples maybe of how, one other point I'd like to make, the increased aesthetic attention is only applied to bridges within a corridor or within a project where it's considered significant or visible. So again, heavy pedestrian use may be the main thoroughfare of a community over a city park or stream. And as an example of that, how we apply it, a project was just let last Friday. Unweave the Weave is our term for it. It's the 694-35E project up in Vadnais Heights. We have 8 bridges on that corridor. Really, only 2 of them receive ornamental rails, concrete form liners, and kind of enhanced railing concrete. And those are the Edgerton bridges and the Labor Road bridges. Those are significant structures for the city. In fact, the city has even contributed money towards those aesthetics in addition to what MnDOT had put into those. So, again, it's not a blanket amount across the project. It's selectively applied where we feel it is appropriate.
Dorian, do you have an idea of what the cost was on each of those bridges for the aesthetics?
On the yes, for Edgerton, I think I do have Edgerton here. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I don't have Edgerton itself. If I could give you an example.
A park example?
Sure. If you turn to the very last page of your handout, what's depicted there is there should be a photo of a bridge in Robbinsdale. This was 36th Avenue North over Highway 100 in Robbinsdale. This structure was actually one of those shown on Almanacs where we did the interview last Friday. The cost for this bridge was $1.4 million for the bridge itself. The aesthetic portion of it we calculate as $82,000, and that was the ornamental railing that you see on the structure, the concrete that was formed and stained to appear similar to stone. And the reason this structure received that treatment was it was a main street for Robbinsdale, very heavy commercial district, a lot of pedestrian traffic, very visible structure. In total, those came to less than 6%. I think that was about 5.8% was what was put into this structure. So, if, Mr. Chairman, hopefully that gives you an example of that investment.
Very good.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make one other point also for major structures. Again, I mentioned the 15% has limits on it, but to give you an idea, the Wakota Bridge, which is currently under construction, fairly large structure, $58 million for the two bridges. The actual investment in aesthetic lighting and the upgraded railing on that all totals around $800,000, so it's just slightly over 1% of that bridge cost really can be attributed to aesthetics. So as I mentioned, we are restrained in our use of this. It's not a, as was, I think the term was used on the television show, millions being spent on massive projects. It was, it's certainly not that. So, you know, in summary, I would like to make the point to be successful in delivering projects as an agency, we need to work with our communities in partnership. We have a public hearing process. We have municipal consent legislation that requires us to work as part of that project development process, and probably certainly appropriately that we work with those committees. So we need cooperation from the cities, and so we listen and we try to respond to those demands reasonably. And it is throughout Minnesota we are doing this. This is not a Twin Cities issue. We have structures in Cloquet, Brainerd, Cold Spring, Bemidji, Manterville, that we've worked with those cities similarly. So these are the structures of the state of Minnesota, and we do try to listen, again, to our citizens on it. I believe there may be a rep from the League of Cities in the room, too, in case you care to hear from that organization. With that, I think I've concluded my remarks. Thank you for your attention.
Okay. Mr. Dorgan, do you have an estimate of a year or biennium if you were to take, and I'm trying to think of the Lohama report, if it was, you know, over a year or 2 years or what have you, but roughly of what we're spending on aesthetics that would be considered unnecessary potentially by some people and needed by others over all the bridges across the state? I know you said there's not a lot in that category A, or maybe no bridges in that one, but can you maybe get it to us otherwise, potentially?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think we'd have to develop that. I don't have that offhand, but you're correct. In category A, there is really has been none.
Okay. Could you come up with a yearly estimate for the last year and get that to each of the committee members if you just could? No big hurry, but
okay.
Some next week or two would be great.
Very good.
Members of the committee, questions? Representative Krenke.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your putting this on the schedule for today at short notice, and I appreciate the department coming over and giving some background information. Obviously, I think it's a concern to all of us when we start looking at the costs or additional costs when the only reason I can think of, I travel underneath the Edgerton Bridge, I think, on a fairly regular basis. The only time I see that the appropriateness of some of the aesthetics designs on the bridge is if I were parked underneath it waiting for the traffic to move down 35E. I don't understand on that location why the state or the city would be investing additional dollars in putting concrete designs, aesthetic designs on the exterior of the bridge. But anyway, that aside, Mr. Has this policy been discussed in the legislature? I know that I've been forwarded from the department the notebook here, or the guidelines that were first published in 1995. Has this ever come up in legislative hearings as to the guidelines, the procedures, or let alone the costs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krimke, I'm not aware that the bridge aesthetic policy has, but this is part of a larger policy on guidelines for cooperative agreements. And frankly, I can't tell you whether that's been discussed within the legislature. It certainly has been discussed with our cities and counties, because as those policies were developed, they were routed through the city and county system for input throughout the state.
Well, I think that we've all heard and talked about the issues of municipal consent, and while I think it's important that cities and counties have some input into the process, I think there's another situation of the issue of being held hostage by a local unit of government. First of all, they come to us at the state wanting dollars either in the transportation bill or in bonding bills for specific bridges, and then for the local unit of government to come back and say, well, we're not going to sign off on the design unless it has certain aesthetic features in it. I find that highly objectionable. As I said, they first come to us and beg us for the money to get the bridge completed, and then they dare say that they're going to hold up the construction of a bridge over the aesthetic design of the bridge. Is that, Stern, has that happened? Is it your knowledge?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krenke, and members of the committee, you know, I'm not aware of being held hostage. Again, this is part of our working as a partner with our local communities. Our highway projects have significant impacts on communities, and we try to deal responsibly with them in a restrained fiscal manner, and that's the purpose of the policy. I think you cited the Edgerton Bridge. There were requests made there that we felt went beyond what we could invest, and the city came up with the rest of the money themselves. So I think that's an example of meeting the city cooperatively on it partway, us investing what we thought was, again, fiscally responsible. And again, I'd open it up if there was a rep from the League of Cities that maybe wanted to address that. If the committee's...
Okay. Well, I might just comment as the as a former chair of the Capital Investment Committee, when I had many communities coming before me and before the before the committee asking for local road and bridge money, and this last legislative session as chair of the tax committee, and the outcry from cities across the state for more local government aid, and then to think that this is a way in which the money is getting expended. Again, I'm all for beautiful bridges, but I think we need to know how much money and what the cost of those additional costs, and who's bearing those additional costs. It doesn't necessarily make me feel any better that the city of Vadnais Heights is contributing additional dollars to put designs into a bridge, which, again, who is making the ultimate decision is part of my question. So, anyway, Mr. Chairman, we don't need to belabor this any further. I think it would be helpful for us to do some further research, number one, in terms of, as you requested, the total costs that are being put into these aesthetic designs for bridges across the state, and also then maybe even perhaps we should look at the impact on local property taxes. And the other thing that concerns me is who is the ultimate decision maker in this process. Seems to me if we're looking at additional costs, to my knowledge, in the state of Minnesota, we still operate on the basis of lowest responsible bidder. And to add 2%, 3%, 4%, 5% or upwards of that for any project, rather than putting it into functional road and bridge design, seems to me to be something a little extravagant.
Mr. Dorgan, I'm sorry to step out for a minute because we were supposed to have rules, but now they pushed the time off a little bit. Is this coming from gas tax funds? I'm sorry if this has been asked already, or is it from bonding funds, from bridge bonding? Is it a mixture? Is it federally matched?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it would just be from our regular sources of funds. So whether those are, you know, in the, as you're probably aware, that's a collection of gas tax federal funds. We don't differentiate how, you know, where the dollar comes that is applied to aesthetics versus the structure cost. It is just within our total funding.
Okay, so it, probably mainly gas tax funds, I would guess, then.
I believe you'd be correct, because my recollection, that's our principal source of funds. Is that correct, Eric? Yes.
Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair, do we have a breakdown of how many dollars of this type are spent in the metropolitan area, seven-county metropolitan area, as opposed to rural Minnesota?
Representative Solberg, Mr. Chairman, no, I don't have a breakdown, but I would say the policy is applied throughout the state. So the, as I mentioned earlier, I named off a number of cities, in Bemidji, Brainerd, Matraville. We've done projects, Cloquet, Cold Spring, number of locations over the last several years where we have worked with the city and, again, applied the policy with regard to what we were willing to invest in aesthetics.
Mr. Chairman, is the aesthetic policy strictly related to the structure of the bridge itself or some ancillary type of things?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it also, there is different levels also within that chart for noise walls, retaining walls, so other highly visible structures. At times there's additional treatments placed on those too, depending on the location. And that's delineated in that table in the policy.
Mr. Dorgan, could you get us the numbers for the aesthetics related to, is there highway aesthetics too that we have that would be considered unnecessary? Retaining walls, flowers, whatever?
Let's see. Well, I can certainly, Mr. Chairman, I will ask to see what we can retrieve as far as any landscaping we do, but I know we have data on the bridges, so I can certainly promise you that.
Maybe what's on the last biennium and then maybe what we're planning for the next biennium. As long as you're doing it, maybe bridges and highways all together would be helpful. I know part of the infamously earmarked federal transportation bill, there was some millions of dollars earmarked for the Ronald Reagan Highway in California. I think Ronald Reagan would be rolling over in his grave knowing that that was in there. But nonetheless, you know, people hear these things, and as you said, there's maybe some corrective information that's needed from what was on television here recently. But certainly, I think more information is helpful for those of us that have to be accountable.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, can I correct one other item?
Go ahead.
Earlier there was a reference made to the funds that counties, cities request annually. Those are entirely different. You know, please understand, those are for county projects very much needed for our local road system. So they are certainly not mixing their funds for local bridge or road projects into MnDOT projects for aesthetics. You know, so just want the committee to keep that separate. When the counties are in next year asking for funds, that's an entirely different issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Members of the committee, do we have any more comments or questions on this or something else? My guess is that this committee is not going to meet for the rest of the year, but we may be having a meeting sometime in January or February, and we'll try to do the best we can to get every member's schedule put together. And if you have topics that you want covered, certainly email me, and we'll try to get something on the agenda of what members are interested in. Representative Krinke?
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be interesting for the committee to look at the new designs that the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission has laid out for hotels and other private facilities that would be located on state land. I think we had the discussion about a little provision in the bonding bill last year that they could lease land. I think it would be fortuitous for the committee to look at what they are planning.
Okay. I've gotten a letter from someone up there on that. Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chairman, the questions that were, or the problems that was out at the nursing home, the vets, and I think this committee has at least done some funding of that. Is that True Health Human Services?
I was planning on having today's hearing actually be about the veterans home, but that comes out of the human services budget. We have the veterans organizations and the Department of Veterans Affairs, but I think it's worthy of potentially having a joint hearing with human services.
I would hope we would, because I know in the time, I've never been on Health and Human Services, but if this committee and others that have dealt with veterans before have always gone out there, and we've been involved in the nursing home aspect of it, and the bonding committee as well.
Yeah. Anybody else that wants to make us think a little bit about future topics that we might cover? If you think of something in the meantime, just give us an email. We'll approach some of the other committees if they want to have something of a joint nature. And I don't know if we're having any reports sent to the committee from the state auditor or some of the other constitutional officers, but as we receive reports that are mandated, we'll be taking a look at those before session starts. Because once session starts, we get so busy and so forth. It'd be nice to have overviews of some of these things so we can hit the ground running. Okay, with that, the committee's adjourned. Thank you.